Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. With so much focus on the COVID pandemic, there's a tendency to forget that there are other diseases, other health issues that have been lost in the headlines. September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month, and we are talking about how COVID is impacting it, as well as the latest information regarding treatment. And joining me tonight are Dr. James G. Taylor VI, Director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital, and Shanetta Richardson, Advocate for Sickle Cell Disease Patients. If you have comments, if you have questions about sickle cell disease, lines are open. Give us a call right now at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Taylor, Shanetta Richardson, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Nice to be here.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Taylor, first, let me start with you. We've got a lot to get into today. And before we get into some of the details of sickle cell, because I always like to kind of give people a refresher about the disease, I do want to get your thoughts on just the impact of, you know, the pandemic and how it has not only affected, you know, kind of the, for lack of a better term, the public relations of getting the word out about sickle cell, but also from a health perspective, what impact has the pandemic had on sickle cell patients?
So, Mr. Fisher, initially I was terribly frightened with the onset of the pandemic in early 2020 because COVID-19 disease presents as a pneumonia. And we see pneumonia in sickle cell disease, and we call it acute chest syndrome. It's both pneumonia and infection, but also sickling in the lungs. And it's very, very severe and makes patients tremendously ill. And I thought if anyone with sickle cell got COVID-19, they'd be extremely ill and in the ICU. And I expected that probably a significant number of patients might die or be at risk for death. And the surprising thing is that hasn't turned out that way. I am only aware of, in the Washington, D.C. area, one death associated with COVID-19 in an unvaccinated patient. And I think the patients, good number of them have had COVID-19, but it hasn't turned out to be as severe as I expected. And this is the perplexing thing about the COVID-19 disease. We still have so much to learn about it. We're just still learning every day. There are new surprises and twists and turns. I guess the other thing that I've learned from this pandemic is with enough focus on a single disease, it is simply amazing to me that two private companies, and in association with the federal government, were able to develop vaccines for SARS-CoV, the virus that causes COVID-19, in less than 12 months. So given enough focus, time, and money, I think any disease is beatable, but you've really got to have intense focus on one objective. And for COVID-19, that was done. And I guess the lesson for me is, if we can generate that type of focus for other diseases like sickle cell or other devastating diseases, I think we can very rapidly develop very exciting new treatments that would be comparable to the vaccines that were developed in less than a year.
That is an interesting point that you just made. Something that, in all of the time that we've been talking about, you know, COVID, it just never occurred to me. A very, very profound point. Shanetta.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I have mixed feelings about it because it's you know, sickle cell doesn't get the recognition or the support that it deserves. We've been trying to raise awareness and find funding just so we can do research to find a cure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very puzzling to me how, you know, people can move so fast in one area and then lack in another area. And I'm not sure, well, I am sure that it's probably because people think, you know, sickle cell is a black disease, an African-American disease. But sickle cell doesn't discriminate. It's majority is in African-Americans, but it doesn't discriminate, so we don't get the recognition that we deserve. We don't get the help and the support and the research that we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And you so, know, if...
No, go ahead, please, finish.
Okay, so if you say, you know, cancer or cystic fibrosis or other diseases, they're getting HIV, they're getting, you know, research and funding and, you know, support. But what about sickle cell anemia disease? Yeah. What about that?
And so now I'll ask you again, how are you feeling? Maybe I should have asked a different way. How are you doing?
Okay, so how am I doing living with the disease?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So right now I'm okay, but living with the disease has put a lot of limitations on my life.
Mm-hmm.
I go through pain crisis. Majority of the time, 90% out the month. So it affects me in my daily life every day. You know, it affects some certain types of organs. You know, this disease had temporarily paralyzed me at one point. You know, so it's just like a touch and go, like a trial and error. But for the most part, because I went through like a bone marrow transplant that didn't work, so yeah, it affects a lot. Mm. But I'm majority in pain all the time, fatigue, you know, taking a lot of different medications, just trying to make sure that I do have a quality of life like everyone else.
And yet, you are advocating not just for yourself but for others.
Yes. I'm advocating for the ones that, you know, can't speak or the ones that's lying in the hospital bed, because sickle cell affects every aspect in our lives. They affect the work aspect of our lives, because sometimes we cannot work. You know, some individuals with sickle cell cannot get a job because of the severity of the disease. Go to school, it affects us. You know, we deal with discrimination. We deal with a lot dealing with this disease because we don't know how we're going to feel day to day. One day we can be fine, and then the next day we're just completely shut down and can't move.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month, and tonight we are talking about the disease, treatments, the impact of the pandemic on awareness, on the disease itself. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Israel, calling from D.C. Israel, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing tonight, Mr. Fisher?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking. Question, Go right ahead.
My question is basically, like, why is it, like, no compassion at Howard University for, like, sickle cell patients? As to say, if you had sickle cell and you've been given Dilaudid or morphine or oxy, and, you know, you're aging up, your tolerance level is building. And, you know, when you get there, they just think you like a dope fiend. Like, no, I'm in pain. I need medication. And, you know, it's just terrible, like, and to experience that type of pain, knowing that they have the medication and they said they can only medicate you every 2 hours or so like that. It's just like no compassion at Howard. Like, Georgetown is awesome, but when it comes to, like, Howard, it's just not that good.
Well, let me see what Dr. Taylor has to say about that, because and Dr. Taylor, this comes to the issue about the pain itself and what causes it, and more detail about what is, you know, at the foundation of what sickle cell disease is. So can you kind of take us through that? Thank you for your phone call, Israel.
I would say, one, treating pain is treating a symptom of sickle cell disease. And real treatment, the pain treatment, it's certainly there and it's important. And I will tell you, over many, many years of experience of being on the other side of the bed with patients, I don't know of a lab test or any value that can, I got to believe the patient. So if you see me, I have to believe you unless I have reason to not believe you. And I always give people benefit of the doubt. I would say, I think you have to think really carefully about which hospitals in the Washington, D.C. area have outpatient treatment programs for sickle cell. Because if you're coming to the emergency room and getting admitted to the hospital, that is not where the treatment really is. That's part of the treatment when you're very ill. But the better part of it is to keep you out of the hospital. And I only know of four hospitals between Richmond, Virginia, and Northern Maryland that really focus on sickle cell disease in that outpatient sense. Two are in Washington, D.C., one is in Virginia, and one is in Maryland. And so I would encourage you to really focus more on that outpatient treatment. And the last 5 years have been incredible for sickle cell. We've gone from 2017, when we had one drug to treat sickle cell. Now we have four, and if you include transfusions, that's five. And I'm not talking about transfusing people in the hospital. I'm talking about regular transfusion programs, essentially replacing your blood every month to minimize the symptoms of sickle cell. So I would encourage you to really focus on that underlying treatment. One of the drugs is given once a month, and I think it's really going to help people. You don't have to take anything at home. You come in once a month, get an IV infusion, and it should reduce your pain symptoms. It's relatively new, but in studies, it reduces pain by about 60%. So it's not a cure, but those types of breakthroughs are really, I think, important. And this is the first time where we've really had, if one medication doesn't work, we have alternatives to turn to. Instead of 5 years ago, we only had one medication, and if that didn't work, or you're left in the hospital, focused on the opioids and the symptomatic treatment.
What is this new drug called? And in layman's terms, how does it work, Dr. Taylor?
Sure. So the drug is a big name. It's called crizanlizumab. That's a fancy name for a monoclonal antibody. And a monoclonal antibody is an antibody that targets, this particular antibody targets white cells that are involved in inflammation in sickle cell. So we've known for a number of years that the cells take on this rigid sickle half moon shape, and they clog up blood vessels, and that deprives tissue of oxygen, and that becomes very painful. But not only are the sickle cells there, but it's also inflammation. So when you get a flu shot and your arm hurts the next day, that's inflammation in your arm. We want white cells to go to where the immunization is being given to turn on your immune system. That's what inflammation is, that soreness in your arm. So this monoclonal antibody targets the white cells that are involved in inflammation in sickle cell. And within a month of giving it, or even within 2 weeks, there is a reduction in pain, both in terms of the acute events that are crises and a reduction in just daily pain.
Shanetta, talk to me a little bit about your sickle cell journey. How far back, you know, were you diagnosed? We know that this certainly is something that, you know, is passed on. How did you deal with it, you know, early in life? Kind of take us through a brief chronology of, you know, as a child when you were dealing with this.
Okay. I was diagnosed at birth.
Mm-hmm.
My parents attended, you know, sickle cell anemia disease runs in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So my family had some knowledge of the disease, but not a lot. At that time, Howard Center for Sickle Cell Disease counseled my parents before I came, but I was diagnosed at birth.
Right.
And then growing up with the disease, I spent most of my life in the hospital. So I can remember days where I was in so much pain that I was in a fetal position. I couldn't see. I can hear everything around me, but the pain was so unbearable that I just could not see anything. And then growing up in my teenage years, I was also in a hospital. Went through a lot of pain, missed a lot of school. I got my GED, confined to a hospital bed. And it was always, I'm not sure she's going to make it to this age. So growing up with sickle cell, I always got like a lot of timelines or death sentences. Oh, she's not going to make it till 15. She's not going to make it till 18. You know, one time I was in a hospital where I was temporarily paralyzed. And then another time I was in a hospital where as all my organs and everything started shutting down, and I spent 8 months in a ICU trying to fight to live, and I wasn't able to care for my newborn child. So the first 8 months of my oldest daughter's life, I was in a hospital fighting for my own.
Hold that point, because I want you to finish this story, and I have more questions about your journey. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It's our Medical Monday conversation. We're talking about sickle cell disease, some breakthroughs, what you need to know. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2. Don't forget to download the app, and you can hear the program live in its entirety. Stretches in for John Mons on the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. It's our Medical Monday conversation. We're talking about sickle cell disease. September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month. We're talking about the latest information regarding treatments, how COVID, the attention the COVID pandemic has received, has impacted information about sickle cell disease, as well as how it has impacted the disease itself. My guests are Dr. James G. Taylor VI, Director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital, and Shanetta Richardson, Advocate for Sickle Cell Disease Patients. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, Shanetta, you were talking about your journey regarding sickle cell, and you mentioned that even as you were dealing with your own health issues, you were also talking about your daughter. How is she? Does she have sickle cell?
So I have three daughters, all which have the trait.
Uh-huh.
So they have the sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean exactly?
So the sickle cell trait, my daughters or my grandchildren, they all have the trait, but they don't have experienced the things that I have experienced having the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't go through the pain crisis or anything else. So they've been healthy all of their lives, so they don't have any health issues or underlying health issues.
So sickle cell trait is where you have one copy of the sickle gene, and to have the disease, you need two copies. So Ms. Richardson has two copies of the sickle gene. When she has kids, she passes one on to children. And if she is having children with somebody who doesn't have sickle cell disease, they'll all have one copy of the gene, and that's sickle cell trait. And it doesn't result in the same symptoms that the disease does. And so this is a genetic disease.
Mm-hmm. And so to that point, Dr. Taylor, if her daughters or anyone with a sickle cell trait, and they know that, if they want to have children and are concerned about having children who and passing on sickle cell disease, should they be tested? Should their mates be tested? And if that person has a sickle cell trait, is the chance that two people with sickle cell traits, is it 100% that an offspring would have sickle cell disease?
It's a 1 in 4 chance with each pregnancy, because this is a recessive disease. You have to have two copies of the mutated gene. But I think this brings up a really important point.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about gene editing, gene therapy, bone marrow transplants, and all that is fine, but really, we've had the cure for 50 years, and that is, or maybe 30 years, and that is, if you know that you have traits and the other parent gets tested and they have a trait, you can go and do in vitro fertilization. It sounds very scientific and very expensive, but in the long run, you do test tube fertilization, and then you do pre-implantation genetic testing, and you implant the embryos that don't have the disease. And that we could eliminate the disease within one generation at relatively low cost. So I would encourage people to, at a minimum, get tested so that they know what they're getting into. I think it is very challenging for young parents to have a child with a chronic disease that puts them in the hospital. It's tough to be a parent for anybody. But it's even tougher to be a parent when you're in the hospital with your child and your child suffering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. John calling from New York. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, sir. My question is for Dr. Taylor. I heard him discuss the COVID deaths, or his view of the COVID deaths and sickle cell patients. My concern is that we're grossly underestimating the disease burden and contribution of sickle cell as contributing to death in COVID patients. Many of these patients are dying natural deaths and being attended to by physicians that don't have great death certificate training. In addition, forensic deaths are potentially not being examined for sickle cell as a contributing factor to a natural cause of death. So when discussing the disease burden in coronavirus, I'm curious as to his thoughts about those statistics as compared to a country like United Kingdom that has autopsy protocol for sickle cell disease and so forth. So I'm just curious as to his thoughts.
Well, thank you for your call, John. Dr. Taylor?
A very good question. So about 10 years ago, I was with a pathologist from the United Kingdom at a big anniversary of the recognition, the first case recognition of sickle cell. And I'm not sure the United Kingdom is much better than the United States. And this has been a challenge. I've run a number of large clinical studies with hundreds and hundreds of patients where we did examine death certificates. And the challenge is everyone always puts down sickle cell disease. And that's usually not the case. It's always more complex, and there's more involved in the process. And it really requires somebody with intimate knowledge of the disease to really go through a case. So, for example, a few years ago, there was a patient who died at Howard Hospital, and I was asked to review the case. And it turns out that the patient presented with a pain crisis, but it turns out that they had congestive heart failure. This is a very young patient, had had a viral infection years before that caused congestive heart failure. And when your heart doesn't pump enough blood to your tissues, they don't get enough oxygen. If you have sickle cell, that'll cause pain. And this patient presented with a pain crisis, but didn't tell anyone that they had heart failure. And that was somewhat lost in the first part of the analysis, but she had uncompensated heart failure. And in my mind, when I did my final analysis of the death, it was a death due to uncompensated congestive heart failure and pulmonary edema, which is water in the lungs, and not necessarily sickle cell per se, although the anemia of sickle cell and sickle cell disease and the presentation with pain all contributed to that process, but it wasn't really due to underlying sickle cell disease. So that's a very important point. And my only hope is that in the future we examine deaths more carefully. We are aware at Howard we've had a good number of patients who have had COVID-19 disease. Relatively few of them have been hospitalized. I've been quite surprised by how mild the disease has been.
So
how mild the disease has been in sickle cell. But I am aware of one death in our hospital for a patient who had COVID-19. Was it due to COVID-19 or complications of sickle cell? We're still reviewing that. So very good question, John.
John, thank you so much for your phone call. So obviously I'm not a physician, and this is a layman's question, but if sickle cell is a disease of the blood and COVID mm-hmm. is, at least initially, it presents as a respiratory disease, although we do know that it has far-reaching impacts on so many other parts of the body, you know, heart and muscles. And I mean, we've learned over the past almost getting close to 2 years now that COVID can present differently in so many other people, but you know, arguably the lion's share of people who have been affected by COVID, they initially present as a result of a respiratory disease. Are these two issues, COVID and sickle cell, so far apart? Is that perhaps why we've not seen more sickle cell patients with a one-to-one correlation?
No, I am quite surprised. The chest X-ray or CT scan of the lungs, you know, if we really image the lungs, COVID has a very unique picture to it. You can almost put your finger on it. Just by seeing the X-ray, it looks like COVID-19. In sickle cell, if we saw that same X-ray, I would call it pneumonia in sickle cell or acute chest syndrome. And when a patient has that syndrome, they get very, very ill. They sometimes end up on a ventilator. They require an exchange transfusion where we take out their blood volume and replace it with transfused blood. This has not happened in COVID-19. And you know, just based on X-ray findings, I've been amazed that the patients, they have the X-ray if they have COVID-19, they have the x-ray findings in the lungs, but they don't have the severe disease that we expect to see with the same x-ray findings in sickle cell. So it's really, really very curious. And the majority of our patients have not been hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
Few have, but not many. So it's very, very curious. And then the other thing that I'd say is, while sickle cell is a blood disease, unfortunately, the blood circulates through every organ.
Yes.
The brain, the heart, the lungs, kidneys, and they're all affected by sickle cell.
Yeah.
Bones, you know, so becoming a sickle cell doctor kind of makes you a jack of all trades. I know a lot about cardiology or heart disease in sickle cell. I know a lot about lung disease in sickle cell. In some ways, more than heart doctors do, because I deal with this all the time. So you really become really, to be a good sickle cell physician, you have to be a very good general physician and take care of a lot of different things that can present in different ways.
Which is why you're the doctor and I'm not. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. ASEA, is that correct? ASEA? ASEA, is that the correct name?
ASA.
Thank you so much. What's your question or comment? ASA, go right ahead.
I was just trying to get clarification on a patient called in asking about a medical situation at the hospital and treatment that
yes.
they received, and the physician's response, in my opinion, didn't address the issue.
Okay. So I probably receive about 25 phone calls from hospitals across the Washington, D.C. area every week about different sickle cell patients. In my humble opinion, I think that it really depends on the individual physician that you're seeing. Some people, and this is Ms. Richardson referred to this, there is a stigma around sickle cell that relates to opioids.
Yeah.
I myself have been told by another physician that I'm causing addiction and that I'm the problem. Okay? It wasn't a great moment in my life. I was trying to get a patient the correct treatment, and that's the response from the physician. But I think those are individual cases, and that can happen in any hospital across the Washington, D.C. area. I think the other part of this is that more opioids are not always better. There are some very specific complications of too many opioids, and there are a group of us between Baltimore and Washington have to deal with these problems. It can actually make your pain worse. Where that happens in an individual patient is complex, and that's why it's always best to as I said to
okay,
the other
can
patient.
Can I stop you for 1 second, please?
No, let him finish, and then
no,
you
one
can.
One second. I need him to understand something.
No, hold on. This is my show, and I will determine who speaks and when they do. Dr. Taylor has the floor. Dr. Taylor, I will allow you to finish, and then I will let you go ahead. Please, Dr. Taylor, finish your point.
Well, as I said to the other patient, I think the focus really should not be on the acute management. Well, certainly that is there and it's important, but you should try and avoid that in the first place. And the way to do that is get into a clinic where we're prescribing any of the four drugs or transfusions and trying to keep you out of the hospital. Because if you're out of the hospital, you don't have to deal with physicians telling you that you can have this or you can't have this. What I don't like seeing is, you know, I look at opioids being prescribed. When I see 30 different physicians prescribing opioids to a single patient in 2 years or in a calendar year, there's no way that's coordinated in any way. And sometimes 30 different physicians keep on treating with more, and it makes things worse. So again, that's where some type of coordinated supervision in an outpatient clinic is far better than individual hospitals and multiple doctors. You really need to get this coordinated. But at the same time, what I'm telling you is I've been in the emergency room advocating for a patient who needed more pain medicine. And when I say that, there's an explosive at times, depending on the individual physician. And clearly, my opinion is that these are people who are not knowledgeable of sickle cell disease. And they'll tell me, you're the problem, doctor. You're causing addiction. This patient is a problem in our emergency room, and you're the cause of it. And I've had this from hospitals across the region telling me this, and at my own hospital. Very frustrating, but I think that's something where I have, as the first caller indicated, the no compassion, I've been on the receiving end of that too.
Okay.
In a different way.
Yeah. Okay. Now, ma'am, go ahead. Make your point. Oh, gentlemen. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I have 2 kids to treat from sickle cell.
I'm sorry. Say that again. You were a little muffled. Start again, please.
I have 2 kids that deceased from sickle cell.
Mm-hmm.
I have sickle cell myself. The only part I called, the reason why I called was the young man had made a statement about being treated a particular way at a hospital. I worked at Washington Hospital Center, L&D, for 12 years. I worked in children's ER for 5 years. So when my children went in there, they got special treatment. So I understood because they were, you know, they know their parent. They knew the parent. But I just felt like the physician didn't address that. His response was, when I see you, I can go by what I see. I would have liked a little more of maybe there's some further communication coming forth that we're going to work on.
So I'll tell you, occasionally I will get consults in our hospital where things are not going well, and it comes from very high administrative levels. Somebody's made a complaint, and I will go in, and very often it's straightforward to me, but I think that there are two things. So your children, when they go to a children's hospital, that's a wonderful success in sickle cell disease. Because you have one building and one program that is coordinated care and everyone goes to a single hospital. Unfortunately, what happens to adults is that nobody tells you to go to Howard or another hospital where there are experts in sickle cell disease and the patients just go wherever. And at times they'll go from hospital to hospital, and it's very hard to ensure that they're getting proper care. And as I say, opioids are an appropriate treatment for pain, but they're also very dangerous drugs. And the doses that we use, at least in adults, so I trained as a pediatrician many, many years ago and then started to take care of adults. And the most terrifying year of my training was the first year that I was really seeing adults on a regular basis, because the opioid doses were so high and the patients were so ill. And I think that, you know, one of the challenges is that you really need to get coordinated care. And it's very different than going into Children's Hospital ER every single time. There's more coordinated care. And again, as I say, I can't control every physician in the D.C. area or in individual hospitals. If you get the wrong physician who tells you this is my maximum dose, or I don't believe in sickle cell pain, there's not much I can do about it unless I'm individually seeing you. And as one physician with limited resources, it's challenging. So I hear that, and all I can say is if you're seeing me, I listen, and I will treat you appropriately, but I would also encourage individual patients to get into a programmed clinic. So again, a children's hospital, you get in and you get treatment to keep you out of the emergency room. I think that should really be the focus. At the same time, when you have events, pain crises, we treat them.
Okay. Sir, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate you contributing to this conversation. I did want to make sure that we did talk about, briefly, what some of the activities and or events were coming to mark Sickle Cell Awareness Month. And, you know, Doctor, if you could share some of those things with us. Certainly,
sure.
I remember a couple of years ago, I participated in some of those things. You know, COVID obviously changing how you do things now.
Yep. So this is a very important year for us. What I'd highlight to all listeners is that sickle cell, unfortunately, as Ms. Richardson said, really doesn't get enough attention. And in my mind, this is the 50th anniversary of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease. And that came about in 1972 when the National Sickle Cell Control Act was passed. So prior to May of 1972, the federal government provided very little, almost no research on sickle cell disease. So this was a piece of legislation that was really required to force federal agencies to even study sickle cell. That piece of legislation was in large part due to the efforts of my predecessor at Howard University, Dr. Scott, who founded the Center for Sickle Cell Disease. He was a tireless advocate. So again, this year we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease. This year, because of COVID, we're having a virtual event. Typically, we have a 5K and a big program on the campus at Howard University. With COVID-19, that is completely out of the question for many, many reasons. So now it's become a virtual event. This year we have a 50K challenge. And for those of you who are not runners or walkers, 50K is 31 miles. So we're asking people to sign up for the challenge at no cost. We'll send you a T-shirt that says Cure Sickle Cell Now. And you download the Nike running app, and it tracks your mileage. And we have, we have about 40 participants right now who are working on the challenge. Some of them have actually completed the 31 miles. But during the month of September, we'd like you to complete that. Mm. And then we have a variety of online events, yoga sessions, dance sessions, Zumba sessions, to get people moving and active.
Shanetta, I'll let you have the last few minutes, because you've done more than a 50K in life with this disease. And as I said, you, even through your struggles, you have remained a powerful advocate. And your voice, you continue to raise your voice in support of patients as well as yourself. You have the floor. What do you want people to know right now in 2021 as there are more strides being made as far as treatment, and yet there are still people who are, like yourself, still struggling with this disease? What do you want people to know?
The new drugs that came out, talk to your physician, make sure you have all the information. So to see if it's going to benefit you and your quality of life. I also want everyone to, like, keep the hope, positive attitude, and make sure that you check in with your mental health. Because I know during this time and this period, a lot of warriors struggle with the mental health on top of what they're going through with the sickle cell anemia disease. So try to stay positive. Hopefully we can get funding and just educate, because that's the way that we're going to get more for ourselves and more for the community as a whole. You know, we educate the doctors, people surrounding us, informing them about this disease. I think we can make a big change if we all come together on one accord. I think we can make a change in this community with this disease.
Yeah. And it's important that you, the Shanetta Richardsons, continue to work hand in hand with those doctors, because, you know, one day I think we will see the light at the end of the tunnel, where there will be a cure, where there will be no more pain. That I'm certainly sure that is the hope.
Yes.
Yeah. Shanetta Richardson, thank you so much for coming on the program and talking to us. Dr. James Taylor, it's good to talk to you again. Keep up the good work and fighting the good fight for the patients, for the center, and for the hospital. I really appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, September 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.